The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. Paper money. It's going the way of the dinosaur. That is extinct. Soon you won't be able to use the paper bills in your wallet or all those Jacksons and Franklins you've been stuffing under your mattress. In fact, this actually just happened to around 1 billion people in India, and it caused just a tremendous amount of chaos. It disrupted their economy in a huge way, and now it's starting to happen in other countries too. And if leaders have their way, they will soon eliminate all paper money, except for perhaps some of the lower denomination bills like fives or maybe tens at the largest. But the global economy is radically changing. Our political leaders have some pretty astounding solutions to our economic problems. And if you can believe it, paper money, the bedrock of our financial system for most of its history, may actually be outlawed at some point in the near future. This is the world we live in today. But as dangerous and as ominous as that is for us in terms of privacy and our personal freedoms, the proposed solutions are even more startling. What is coming next for America, for this world? What will a world without paper money look like? Stay tuned today to find out. I'm your host, Robert Morley, filling in for Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and we have a fantastic program for you today. To take a phrase out of Donald Trump's vocabulary, today's show will be just great. It'll be a great show, a great, great show. You are listening to kpcg.fm online or 101.3 on the FM dial, and you can find The Trumpet Daily on SoundCloud or at thetrumpet.com. We are broadcasting live from Herbert W. Armstrong College campus here in beautiful Edmond, Oklahoma. The sun is coming up as I'm looking out the big picture window in front of me here today. Thanks for tuning in and for joining us. We do appreciate your comments and your feedback. We do read them all. If you'd like to send some comments our direction, go ahead and send those to td@kpcg.fm. td@kpcg.fm. Well, today I do want to talk about just how fantastically fast, just how quickly our world's financial system is changing and how it's going to impact you, what that means for you and your wallet, and what that means for this world and the nation we live in. And just to give you a quick little example of how things are changing, here's a news bit I collected yesterday. It comes from The Ledger. I'm dated February 21st. The title of this article is "Lawyer Seeks to Eliminate Paper Checks from Home Buying Process." And you know, at first you might think this doesn't sound like that big of a deal, and in a way it isn't. But if you're a homeowner, or if you've ever purchased a house, or if you're thinking about buying a house, pay attention, because there's a new convenience being offered you here. A new convenience. The article begins, "After decades as a real estate attorney, Lynn Ligard is unsettled that homebuyers are still writing paper checks for their earnest money." And this article goes on to talk about the typical house buying process, and anybody who's ever bought a house knows this. When you go to make your offer, you have to submit some earnest money to let the seller know that you're serious about buying the house. And you know, traditionally that means you have to pull out your checkbook, and you have to sit down and write out a check for, you know, $1,000 or $500 or $2,000 or whatever it is. And then you have to take that check and give it to your real estate agent, and then your real estate agent has to take that paper check and give it to the listing agent. And then that listing agent has to take that check and drive down to the local bank where the account is, or the escrow account where that money is going to be deposited, and they have to deposit that check. And then you have to wait for the check to clear, And there's this big, long, drawn-out process that takes time, and it's inconvenient. And the article goes on to say, and that this is really what caught my eyes. He said, it was making the point about just how inconvenient it is. How inconvenient it is for people to have to write out a check. I mean, what does this say about how our modern society has changed in recent years? I mean, writing a check has become an inconvenience. To me, this is just amazing. This is amazing. This is really just a commentary on our modern society and how much it has changed in recent years. When you think about checks and when they were first created, I mean, checks were the convenience. They were the convenience. I mean, before checks came along, if you wanted to pay someone and you didn't have the cash on you, you had to, you know, get out the old horse and buggy or you're jumping your jalopy and head down to the local bank. And once there, then you had to, go through all the rigmarole of getting some money withdrawn from the account. Maybe that was a bag of gold coins. And then you had to take those down with you and pay whoever you're going to pay. And that was considered dangerous. That was considered inconvenient. And at that time, people just loved checks as they were coming up because, you know, that meant that on the way out of the bank, they couldn't be held up by Bonnie and Clyde or Jesse James or whoever and have their treasure stolen. And checks, the checks were the safe option because supposedly they couldn't be used by someone else. But now, as this article is pointing out, checks have become an inconvenience and are actually considered the dangerous option because too many people see them. Too many people can glean the information off of those checks, your address, your name, bank account numbers, routing numbers, things like that. So now people are able to put down earnest money when you're buying a house without actually having to write a check. You can do it electronically with just a couple push of buttons on your smartphone. This article goes on to talk about this new system called trust funds and how the system is attached to the MLS or that multiple listing service that all realtors and real estate agents have access to, and it's just being built into the system. And now it's just going to be that much easier for you to purchase a home. You don't actually have to go and write out a physical check or even go down and get physical check from the bank anymore. And I know, as interesting as this sounds, as interesting as this news item is, I know someone out there is thinking, well, thanks a lot, Robert. You've just saved me an incredible amount of time and convenience. I may actually, in my lifetime, have to write maybe one or two fewer checks. Thank you very, very much. And I understand that completely, and that's very true. But the reason I'm talking to you about this is because this development is just the latest in a trend that is really sweeping the globe. It is part of a trend that is revolutionizing our financial system. And that's why I bring that to your attention to you today. I mean, who knew back in the 1980s, you know, when credit cards were becoming popular, that they would actually help kill paper money? And we really have gotten to this point in our economy where we could, and sooner than most people think, be living in a world without paper money. Just think about, just take a couple of seconds to think about how much this world has really changed over the past just few years. We have just a fantastic array of payment methods at our fingertips today. You know, it used to be that there was just, we had cash, and then we had checks, and then we had credit cards, and then maybe a bank transfer or something. But today's world is totally, totally different. I read an article recently about how people go through life, born now, and they'll go through life, and they won't ever, ever have to use paper money. And even today, there's people in urban centers that never, ever use paper money. They don't ever have to pull out a wallet and carry a wallet and pull out a Franklin or a Benjamin or, you know, any of that paper money. I mean, you can leave your home, and you can even leave your credit cards at home. And I'm not even talking about credit cards here. You can leave your credit cards at home. And you can, in a lot of major centers today, in bigger cities especially, you can get through life perfectly well without even having a credit card or cash. You have your phones now. You have Android or Samsung or Apple Pay. And it's contactless. So you just pay with your phone. They're actually testing programs now where you just speak to your phone to pay for something. You just say the words, I will pay with Google, and your phone recognizes your voice. I will pay with Google, and your phone pays your bills for you. It really is just amazing what technology is doing today, that phones can recognize your voice signature and access your bank accounts and make those payments. And if you shop online like so many people do today, you've got PayPal, you've got PaySafe card, you've got Zap, you know, you have all kinds of mobile banking apps you can use to pay and transfer money. You've got Mint, you've got Money Dashboard. I mean, there's dozens and dozens of ways now that you can pay without actually having to use physical cash. And I'm not even talking about credit cards, your Amex or your MasterCard or your American Express. There's all kinds of payment methods today. And then on top of all those, there's now even a host of what are called virtual currencies. Virtual currencies. You probably heard of Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin, it's one of those virtual currencies. No actual paper money exists. It can be spent in every country in this world. There's people accepting Bitcoin, from what I understand, in every country in the world now. You know, as long as a vendor chooses to accept it, they can take it. The value of it goes up and down just like any other currency, any other regular paper currency, except the big difference, of course, is Bitcoin and these other cryptocurrencies, these virtual currencies, they exist outside of government's control, or at least they're supposed to. They can be spent anywhere. There's no foreign transaction fees with them, no fees to convert between currencies because it's a universal currency, and no taxes get paid when they're used either. So they become very, very popular. They're handy. They're convenient. Supposedly, they're very, very secure. A lot of people seem to like them, and they have a growing user base. You know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people starting to use these currencies. And Bitcoin, it uses a technology called blockchain technology. And this is something that I'd like to talk a little bit more about today if we have some time, because it's really starting to disrupt the financial system. There's a lot of experts out there, a growing number of experts that see just really a growing number of applications for this technology, and it seems to be disrupting the financial industry, and people think it'll disrupt the medical industry and even the real estate industry and the insurance industry and a lot of other industries that have been operating kind of on autopilot for many years. A lot of the big banks actually feel threatened by it, and some are embracing it. They see it as the future. But today, in many places in America, as I said, you don't even need paper money to get along. You don't need it to survive. I mean, personally, I rarely use it anymore, and it's kind of strange to say this, but it's a bit of a hassle to use. You have to go to the bank. You have to go to the ATM. You get ATM fees, all those kind of things. And I know, you know, it's kind of a first world problem. You know, there's a lot of people in this world that have bigger problems than that. But what I'd like to talk to you about today is the solution that many of our leaders are offering to the paper money, the so-called paper money problem. And if we truly are headed towards a cashless society, there are some pretty big and some disturbing implications from that. And that's what I'd like to talk to you and talk with you about today. As a reminder, you're listening to KPCG.FM. online or 101.3 on the FM dial. And I am your host for today, Robert Morley, filling in for Stephen Fleury. Don't worry, he will be back, not tomorrow. Tomorrow you'll actually have another very special guest, a very, very special guest filling in. So you have that to look forward to, and it will be a great program, a fantastic program. So make sure you don't miss that one either. This morning, today, we are talking about a trend that is taking hold across the world. If you're just tuning in today, we're talking about living in a world in which paper money is disappearing. And all around the world, we're starting to see these things. Actually, according to Sweden's National Bank, just 2% of transactions last year in Sweden were in cash. Just 2%. And Norway and Denmark are close behind. Norway says it'll be cashless by, or like paper money cashless by 2020. In the United States, cash and checks only make up around 38% of transactions today. So that's way down. That's falling very, very rapidly. Most transactions back in 2015, this is 2 years ago now, 62% of transactions were with things like credit cards and debit cards and electronic payments and et cetera. And I saw a story how, you know, even churches now are reporting, there's a church that's reporting that the majority of its donations now come in electronically. And when they pass the plate around at church, they have a phone number on the little basket that people can text donations to and text offerings to. So it's something that is really starting to take hold in society today. But as I mentioned, there's also some implications from this, from having a cashless society. And you can think about how this is changing things. Actually, last November, you might have heard that India eliminated about 80% of its paper currency by surprise. I mean, overnight. Now, this is a country of 1 billion people. And India's prime minister made a surprise announcement and said, as of such and such time, 80% of our currency, of our paper money, is going to be outlawed. I've got an article here for you from CNBC dated November 8th. It's titled, India Abolishes Larger Banknotes in Fight Against Graft and, quote, Black Money, unquote. This article begins, consumers in the world's biggest democracy. This is democracy. This isn't an autocracy. This isn't a dictatorship. This is in India. Consumers in the world's biggest democracy got a big surprise. Yes, it was a surprise, a huge surprise. The article continues, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi on Tuesday announced that 501,000 rupee banknotes would be withdrawn from circulation at midnight, saying it was part of a crackdown on rampant corruption and counterfeit currency. But how would you like that? One day, your alarm goes off, you get up out of bed, you turn the radio on, and you're told Prime Minister, President, whatever it is, has announced as of midnight, your money are going to start to be withdrawn from circulation. And if you don't quickly head to the bank, and if you don't get to the bank within 2 or 3 days, whatever paper money you have on hand is going to be worthless. You won't be able to use it anymore. I mean, this is what happened to almost around a billion people in India, and it caused just a massive disruption to India's economy. The GDP took a hit. People were standing in lines all day trying to get in the banks to deposit their money, to get the money into the banking system. I mean, poor people, there's stories about poor people in rural India that don't have easy access to banking and couldn't get into the centers. They had to take all their money and band together with their family members and pool all their resources together and send one person in to make deposits for the family. Otherwise, the family's savings was going to become worthless. And basically, the government told these people that if you want to keep your money, the only way you're allowed to do that is if you put it into the banks, if you put it into the banking system. And the government didn't even release any new bills. It's not like they took out the old bills, the 500s and the 1,000s, the old ones, and replaced them with new ones. They just said, no, you have to have your money in the banking system. And they said, yeah, in his announcement, Modi said, at some later date, we may produce new 500 and 1,000 bills. And I think actually now, months later, they actually are starting to produce those now. But this caused a huge disruption, and politicians knew this was going to happen. They weren't naive about this, but they did it anyway. Here's why. Back to that article. The article continues, India is hampered by so-called black money that is undeclared, untaxed, or under the table, said Sasha Reiser-Kosatsky, lead South Asia analyst at the research firm Eurasia Group. The unexpected step appears designed to bring billions of dollars worth of cash in unaccounted wealth into the mainstream economy, as well as hit the finances of Islamic militants who targeted India and are expected of using fake banknotes. Quote, the move to restrict the circulation of large denominated currency notes represents a major step in the government's fight against black money, Kosatsky said. Speaking at an address to the nation, Modi said that black money, quote, and corruption are the biggest obstacles in eradicating poverty. And then he went on to say that new notes would be issued at some later date in the future. So just typical of these elitist leaders that lead our country today. You know, there's here we have India, hundreds of millions of poor people made to suffer so a few rich people can supposedly be cracked down upon. And the reality is, and this is reality, most rich people in India weren't using a 500 and 1,000 rupee notes. I mean, a $500 or 500 rupee note, that's equivalent of like $7 in the U.S. It's not like they were had great big warehouses of 500 rupee notes. I mean, it was a total sham. This was a power grab by the government. Most rich people in India kept their wealth in things like gold, or they owned businesses or real estate, or they had investments in stocks and bonds. It wasn't in 500 rupee notes. But what happened in India is part of a trend that we are seeing in a lot of countries, and that is this movement to abolish and to destroy paper money. It really is a worldwide movement, and we're seeing this really just pick up speed and begin to snowball in a lot of countries. Last year, the European Central Bank, it stopped printing the 500 euro note. This is the largest note that the Europeans, the euro, that they use over there in that eurozone. And although you know a lot of people weren't using that 500 euro note, it was a very, very popular note among small business owners, those that have a lot of money flowing in through their hands, auto dealerships, for example, other small businesses. And those leaders in Brussels, they said that they were getting rid of that 500 euro note because it was to crack down on crime and to get those terrorists and those tax evaders. But what we're seeing is that was just the latest move in Europe. We've seen all kinds of moves in Europe to get rid of paper money. A number of years ago already, back in 2012, Spain, they banned all cash transactions above 2,500 euros. In Italy and Greece, they've told their people it's now illegal to pay for something using cash over more than 1,000 euros. So in Italy and France, you can't go to the bank and take out 1,000 euros and go and use that to buy something. It has to be done electronically where it's reported, and there's an electronic paper trail. In Greece last year, they banned all transactions over 500 euros. And then last year, politicians in Germany proposed a similar ban on transactions above 5,000 euros. So there really is this movement that is taking place. It's not just in Europe either. It's picking up speed even in America and other countries. I came across this article yesterday out of China. It's titled, China is Developing Its Own Digital Currency. China is developing their own digital currency. Why do you think China is developing their own digital electronic currency? What's going on there? What do you think they're trying to do here? This is out of Bloomberg, dated February 23rd. It's talking about how China's central bank is going digital. It's going digital. They're getting rid of paper money. That's the ultimate goal. This article begins, after assembling a research team in 2014, the People's Bank of China has done trial runs of its prototype cryptocurrency. That's taking it a step closer to becoming one of the first major central banks to issue digital money that can be used for anything from buying noodles to purchasing a car. This is amazing. This is part of a trend here that's starting around the world. The article continues, for users transacting over their smartphones or laptops, the People's Bank of China-backed cryptocurrency probably wouldn't seem like much different to existing payment methods such as Alipay or WeChat, but for sellers, they would get digital payments directly from the buyer, lowering transaction costs as the middleman is cut out of the process. Okay, continuing with the article, it says, at the same time as it builds up its own capabilities, the People's Bank of China is increasing scrutiny of Bitcoin and other private digital tenders. It doesn't want a Bitcoin bubble to blow up. And now this is where it starts to get interesting here. It says, and since currencies have historically been issued by the state, not private players, it doesn't want to cede the cryptocurrency space to companies it has, quote, no control over. So see the government of China, they're seeing this trend take place. They want to be in front of it, and they want to be able to control these digital currencies. So China's getting ready to issue its own digital currency. The article continues, Chinese people have embraced online payments for just about everything. You know, we think of China as kind of, many people in America, I think, still think of China as this country that's still a little bit backwards. But in some ways, they're actually moving faster than America. They're more advanced in America. I mean, they have really embraced online electronic payments in China. The article continues, to buy a can of Coke, thirsty commuters can scan QR codes on their smartphone rather than feed coins into a vending machine. You know, there are vending machines over there. There's codes on the products. You scan them. You automatically pay with your phones. There's no money, no cash, no coins involved. I mean, there's big changes taking place in China today and around this world. Now, all of this is heralding some pretty big changes in the economic system. Now, pay attention here, because this article now is starting to get into the heart of what's going on and why so many governments want to get rid of cash, and why so many academics and leaders and the elites in these countries want to go to a digital currency. And it isn't just China. It's Germany, too. It's, and in particular, it's the European Union and many leaders in Europe. This is a big movement. A lot of political elites are behind this movement. A man we talk a lot about on thetrumpet.com, Carl Theodor zu Guttenberg, he's pushing this kind of technology. He's pushing blockchain technology, digital currency, the underpinnings of digital currencies like Bitcoin. The European Central Bank and other authorities are really behind this. And there's even a big movement in the United States. Some leaders, like Larry Summers, former Treasury Secretary of the United States, pushing electronic currencies, wants to get rid of paper money in the United States. Academics like Ken Rogoff from Harvard, pushing papers, lobbying to get rid of paper money in the United States. And there's a reason why these elites want to do that. Back to the Bloomberg article, talking about why do countries want to embrace these digital currencies. The article says, getting to know more precisely how much banks lend, where the money goes, and the pace of credit creation is key to curbing money laundering and making monetary policy more effective, said Duan Xingxing, vice president of Beijing-based OK Coin Company, one of the country's biggest Bitcoin exchanges. Issuing digital currency will make it easier for the People's Bank of China to monitor risk in the financial system and, get this, and track transactions economy-wide. See, this is really starting to get to the heart of why governments want to embrace this. This is all about, it's all about knowledge. It's all about information. We live in the information age. It's all about information being power. And it's about being able to monitor and trace every single transaction in an economy. This is where things are headed. This is the ultimate goal. Governments want the ability to track and trace every single transaction in the economy. I mean, that kind of information is gold to economists. That's why guys from Harvard are supportive of this. This is the kind of data that they need, that the Ben Bernankes and Janet Yellens of the world and Mario Draghi's, the central bankers of the world, this is the information that they dream of so that they can play God with the economy. And this is also, and this is the problem, this is also the exact type of data that, if it's in the wrong hands, would give just incredible power to authorities. Incredible power. I mean, this is the power to collect data and monitor people in ways that were just unthinkable, totally unthinkable, just a few years ago. People, just a few years ago, this was impossible. It's reality today. Back to the article. In January 2016, the People's Bank of China said it will have its own cryptocurrency, quote-unquote, soon. But there has still been no formal start date. So they're still in the test phase. And this article talks about how, you know, India went through and it abolished cash last year and scrapped 86% of its banknotes. Overnight in India, bang, 86% of its banknotes. These are now going to be worthless. Turn them in. You have a couple of days because after that, they're valueless. And this article says that the push to use digital payments is taking off in other countries. It says the Bank of Canada, the Deutsche Bundesbank in Germany, and the Monetary Authority of Singapore are all examining digital currencies. And you know, if they're taking a look at these are, you know, the first steps towards embracing them. The article continues, printing money and combating counterfeiters is expensive. Adding digital currency to cash in circulation can improve the speed, convenience, and transparency of transactions. See, everybody's going to be able to know. All transactions are going to be, if this is adopted, all transactions are going to be transparent. Already, as we have embraced electronic money, digital money, to the degree we already have through credit cards and things like that, already your transaction histories are there. They're all there. They can be found. The article continues, cutting costs is an obvious benefit, but the impact is shifting to blockchain-based digital money from the current payment structure goes beyond that. This is a quote from Larry Xiao, director from the CFA Institute in Hong Kong. And he says, quote, there's a potential you can pay anybody in the system, any bank and any merchant directly. Blockchain will change the whole infrastructure. This is revolutionary, he says, quote, unquote. Blockchain, these digital currencies, electronic money, it's changing the whole infrastructure of our financial system. It really is just a revolution that's happening in our monetary system around this world. Blockchain, you know, I was talking about that earlier. It sounds kind of complicated, but really blockchain is just, it's just this computer technology. It's the software, the code, the behind the scenes framework that just accounts and tracks the activity, that electronic activity. It's an open ledger that makes sure that transactions can't be faked, or it makes it very hard for them to be faked. But this is that technology that's being embraced, and it's this technology that so many people say is soon going to record and track and monitor every single financial transaction or contractual transaction or legal agreement that's conducted in modern society, in at least the advanced nations around the world. This is coming soon. This article from Bloomberg continues, blockchain is basically the digital ledger that contains the payment history of each calculation of the unit. If the People's Bank of China's version is widely adopted, that would challenge existing intermediaries such as banks and payment services. For the People's Bank of China, using blockchain, the technology that underpins the digital currency, Bitcoin, will allow it to trace transactions and collect, quote, real-time, complete, and authentic, unquote, data. See, they're going to be able to collect real-time data. Real-time, authentic data. And the article continues, and compile precise monetary indicators such as money supply growth. The article continues, quote, the transparency of economic activities in every corner of the country will significantly improve. The central bank will have unprecedented knowledge of how the economy runs. See, this is all about knowledge and information and collecting data. And these banks are going to have unprecedented information that they've never had before about your personal privacy, your habits, your spending. Not only are they going to know what you're spending, your money on, how much you're spending it on, when you're spending it on. They're also going to know where you were when you spent it, who you were buying from, who you're communicating from, who your circle of contacts are, where you move, where you go. All this data is there that's going to be able to be mined by governments collecting this data. And it's starting to happen now. We all heard about the NSA spying scandal. That is small compared to what is coming and what could quickly be coming. You know, at the NSA scandal, collecting data on millions of people, millions and millions of Americans, and lying about it, but never mind that, and storing it and keeping it, and then, you know, when looking for that, sifting through it for potential crimes, and when a crime does happen, not having to go to a judge and getting a search warrant and being able to go back through people's phone records and look and try to dig up and find evidence of crimes. I mean, that's what the NSA was doing. And now the government is going to have the amount of data at their fingertips with the way computing power has been advancing that just dwarfs that. I mean, it's going to just, I mean, the NSA spying scandal is going to be tiny compared to the potential abuses of power that are coming now. And that Bloomberg article just talks about just the potential for changing the entire economic infrastructure of the world, and how we're in this age where it's really just being revolutionized, it's being just radically altered. And just having a basic understanding of human nature, people should know that with this kind of data being collected, it's going to be abused. The potential for abuse is there, and we're seeing Chinese authorities embracing this technology. We're seeing European authorities embracing this technology. I mean, this technology represents some very, very big dangers. There's a financial website that I like to read. I think it's just excellent. It's produced by Mike Shedlock over at Global Economic Trend Analysis. And if you want to look it up, you can just Google the word MISH, M-I-S-H, and it's the top hit. It comes up. And he talked about this subject recently, and he mentioned that, you know, as this technology is being embraced and governments are embracing it, they're studying it now, he says that governments will know where every penny is at every second. Think about that, where every penny is at every second. They will know every monetary transaction in real time. I mean, never in the history of this world has this been possible. I mean, this is some astounding stuff here. If this technology is embraced, Shedlock goes on to say that no longer will you be able to give the babysitter, gardener, bartender, a friend, or anyone else an extra penny without the government knowing. Well, for one reason, pennies aren't going to exist anymore. They're going to be electronic. But with that blockchain technology, with this electronic money, it's all going to be recorded, and it's all going to be data mined, and it's all going to be analyzed and looked at and scrutinized. Sales tax collection, value-added tax collection, it's going to be instantaneous. No longer will you be able to have a garage sale, for example, and collect money and not pay taxes on it. I mean, governments have already been trying to crack down on garage sales and people not paying taxes on that. Negative interest rates, we've talked about that on Trumpet Hour before. People forced into the banking system, negative interest rates where you pay the bank interest for the privilege of depositing your money. That's the next step. That's where this is heading as well. If you're forced into the banking system, there's no way out of not paying negative interest rates. Here's how Shedlock sums things up. He says, if cash is banned, the blockchain will record every penny you spend and who you gave it to. And yes, money laundering will become much more difficult. And I'll add, you know, the government will probably be able to track terrorism better as well. Shedlock continues, but the cost will be a loss of privacy, threats of negative interest rates, and other cash confiscation schemes. And I think he's right about that. But, and this is a big but here, what we're seeing here with this move towards a cashless society, it's also heading in one more place. And this is a far, far more dangerous place. But before we get to that, just a reminder for our listeners out there, you are listening to the Trumpet Radio, Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'm today's host, Robert Morley. I'm filling in for Stephen Fleury, and you are listening to kpcg.fm online or 101.3 on the FM dial. Thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate all the feedback you send in. Email us at td@kpcg.fm. That's td@kpcg.fm. We read all of that feedback. We do very much just appreciate it. We've been talking about this trend, about the world heading towards a cashless society and how blockchain technology is starting to disrupt the economic landscape and some of the dangers that are associated with that. And this blockchain technology has enabled all kinds of open ledger, what's called open ledger verification processes, which have allowed all kinds of cashless payment systems to just balloon in popularity. In some countries already, in Northern Europe in particular, are already almost completely cashless, and China's heading that way, and there's signs that even in America, we're looking at adopting some of those things. People are pushing for some of those things. But what I'd like to talk about next, in the time we have remaining here, is where this blockchain technology and this cashless society is really heading. And I want to show you where this is going, because if you want to know where this trend is heading, any major trend in the world, if you want to know where it's heading, there's really only one place you can go to understand that, to see that, to know what the future holds. I mean, you can look at trends, you can analyze all the data points you want, but there really is just one sure source of understanding about the future. There's only one place you can get that. If you have your Bibles with you, you know this program is supported by the Philadelphia Church of God. If you have your Bibles, I want to show you a prophecy today. Turn over to Revelation 13. And as you're turning over there, I'll just start reading out of verse 1, Revelation 13, verse 1. It says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemy." So here, this is talking about a global economic and military superpower that's prophesied to come on the scene in this end time, in those days just prior to the return of Jesus Christ. And we have been proving this for many, many years. And you can read about this and find ample proof of this on the trumpet.com website. There's all kinds of articles there. But this is talking about a revived Holy Roman Empire. And this empire is prophesied to rise again in Europe. And it's going to lead and it's going to dominate the world's economic system. Once again, it's going to be the military, and one nation in particular is going to be the military heart of Europe, and it's going to lead it. And this resurrected Holy Roman Empire, it's called the Holy Roman Empire with the emphasis on holy for a reason, because there is going to be this religious element to this empire. Religion, and in particular a specific religion, is going to guide, it's going to direct this empire. And this great religious organization is going to use its power to help weld the various nations of this empire together and hold it together as a very strong, as a superpower for a short period of time. And ultimately, you know from your Bible prophecies that this Holy Roman Empire is prophesied to lead the world into World War III, into the next world war. But this Holy Roman Empire, it's going to do something else. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. Drop down to verse 6 in Revelation 13. It says, And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God. This is talking about the beast power. He opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. Verse 7, And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. So this beast power, it's going to kill a lot of God's own people. And the saints that are mentioned there, these are God's people who are going to be martyred for their beliefs. These are God's people that aren't being protected by God because they are not obeying him the way they should be. Now notice verse 15. And this is very interesting in light of what we've been talking about today, down in verse 15, Revelation 13, verse 15. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the beast or would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Verse 16, and he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in the right hand or in their foreheads, that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. So here this is talking about something that's called the mark of the beast. And everyone is going to have this special mark if they want to buy or sell, if they want to have a job, if they want to have a bank account. They're going to have this mark of the beast. Yet God also warns his people. He says, you better not take that mark. You better not go along with what the beast is telling you to do, because if you do, there's going to be big consequences. Even if they say the beast says that you're going to have to die if you're a believer, you better do that. Even if you have to be martyred, you better not take that mark of the beast. So this is a very, very serious situation here. Next chapter, Revelation 14, dropping down to verse 8. And there followed another angel saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. In the Bible, I think you know that Babylon is used as a symbol of false religion. So there is this element of false religion here. Verse 9, and the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God. So God says, don't you dare take that mark of the beast. Verse 11, and the smoke of their torment ascended up forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night who worship the beast in his image, and whosoever receives the mark of his name. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. So here, this is a pretty strong warning that God's people better not be part of that system. They better not be part of that beast power system. They better not take that mark of the beast. They better keep the commandments of God, as it says there in verse 12. And this is talking about those same 10 commandments that are talked about in Deuteronomy 5 and Exodus 20. So the question here is, what exactly is this mark of the beast? What is it that God's people better not take? And, you know, a lot of people have all kinds of ideas about this. If you Google this on the internet, you're going to get all kinds of just really strange and wacky ideas. You're going to see articles about, you know, people getting computer chips planted in their bodies and in their hands. And some people claim that is the mark of the beast. It isn't. Some people think, you know, it's social security numbers. Other people think it was Hitler's swastika, that symbol. I mean, there's all kinds of ideas out there. There's all kinds of confusion because, well, they're just people's ideas. And that's really the problem. If you want to understand the Bible, if you want to know what this is talking about, what the Bible talks about, you have to let the Bible interpret itself. You have to, you know, go to the Bible for the answer. You have to take here a little, take from there a little, as it says in Isaiah 28, and really let the Bible do the talking and the explaining. And these passages we've been reading about the mark of the beast, this is something that Herbert W. Armstrong has explained and has been warning about and writing about and wrote about since at least the 1950s. And there's a book that I would love for you to order that explains all of this from your Bible. If you're interested, it's absolutely free. You know, there's no cost. There's no obligation of any kind. We never sell or give away your mailing information. This book is just being offered freely in the hope that you'll learn from it and that you'll use it and get to know your Bible better and be motivated to take action from what you learn and let God change your life and help you and let it help make world events and prophecy come alive to you. Anyway, I think this book, you'll really, really enjoy it, and it'll help put things into context for you. The title of this book is Who or What is a Prophetic Beast by Herbert W. Armstrong. Who or What is the Prophetic Beast? And you can order it for free by going to thetrumpet.com website and just click on that literature tab at the top, or you can call into the Philadelphia Church of God headquarters and you can order that book. But in that book, Who or What is a Prophetic Beast, Mr. Armstrong explains this mark of the beast and what exactly it is. And in that book, he shows that it is really Sunday worship. Sunday worship is the mark of the beast. And he shows, and he goes through and shows how historically there was this great false religion that tried to force God's people to worship on Sunday and to stop worshiping on Saturday, the Sabbath, and how even in history, Emperor Constantine changed the Sabbath from Saturday to Sunday. And you know, part of that order at that time was that people were to stop Judaizing on the Sabbath. They were to stop resting on the Sabbath, and they were to start working on Sunday. And they forced people to work on Sunday, and they are on Saturday, and they forced people to rest on Sunday. And many of those people who refused, you know, they were martyred. They were killed. You know, that's just reality. That's history. But as we all know, history repeats, and it's going to repeat again, in this book of Revelation here that we've been reading scriptures about, I mean, this is a book for the end time, just before the return of Jesus Christ. And in this book, Mr. Armstrong, he really does, he goes through and he shows right out of the Bible, he proves that the mark of the beast is Sunday worship, and people are going to be locked out of the economic system once again if they refuse to work on Saturday, and if they refuse to worship on Sunday. That's coming. That's where this world is heading. And that's what I find so interesting about, you know, some of the things we've been talking today about, heading towards a cashless society and this blockchain technology and digital currencies where governments are going to be able to just know exactly what you're doing, when you're doing it, who you're doing it with. There's just, with technology today, governments can intrude into your lives in ways they've never been able to in the past. And we are really seeing, with this embracing of blockchain technology, this move towards a cashless society, with all the advances in computing power and open source ledgers, we're just seeing a world and a system that can be just, it's prone to abuse and being exploited. I mean, this is the world we're heading into. We're heading into a world without paper money and a world in which all commerce is conducted and paid for electronically. That's the world we're heading towards. And governments are going to have the ability to keep track of every single financial transaction you make. There will be no privacy. The days of privacy are ending. This cashless society, this society, it's headed our way, and in many respects, it's already here. The technology is being put into practice, and government leaders are saying they're embracing it to stop terrorism. But who decides who a terrorist is? Who defines what a criminal is? Is it someone who keeps the Sabbath? Is it someone who refuses to conduct business on Saturday? Is it someone who refuses to worship or give donations on Sunday? You know, these are questions that people haven't had to deal with for hundreds and hundreds of years, but they are coming back, and you need to be prepared for them. You need to know what the Bible says about them. So if you haven't already, go ahead and request the free booklet, Who or What is a Prophetic Beast by Herbert W. Armstrong. It's absolutely free. Just order it today by going to thetrumpet.com. There's a whole lot more on this on the subject on thetrumpet.com. In fact, Josue Michels from our Newsboro wrote an article about this in the January 2017 edition of the Philadelphia Trumpet magazine. That Philadelphia Trumpet magazine is also free. So if you like what you heard today, if you're interested in what you heard today, if you want more information about what you heard today, go ahead and subscribe to the Philadelphia Trumpet magazine. You can do that by going to thetrumpet.com website. Once again, no cost, no obligation. It's free. Just a very high quality educational publication available to you for your benefit. So go there and check that out. We are coming to the end of our program today. We have been discussing the mark of the beast and how it's going to be enforced and how recent advances in technology are going to make it impossible, just utterly impossible to avoid the prying eyes of Big Brother. If you have any comments about today's program or any other program, go ahead and send them to td@kpcg.fm. We look forward to hearing from you. You are listening to kpcg.fm online or 101.3 on the FM dial. Find us on SoundCloud and on thetrumpet.com. A big thanks to our technical team, Josh Sloan and Dwight Falk. Once again, this is Robert Morley filling in for Stephen Fleury. Thanks for joining us today. Look forward to talking with you again soon. Have yourself just a fantastic day.